Torch editor Jamie Pennock, and this is the Torch audio update for Monday, February 2nd, 2009. I'm joined once again by Torch columnists Matt Pelkey and Jason Bent for a breakdown of Saturday night's UFC 94 card. We only got five fights on this card, as pretty much everything went to decision except for the final two fights, but the final two fights definitely delivered. The much-hyped main event between George St. Pierre and BJ Penn absolutely 100% delivered in a completely different manner than anyone expected. So we've got a lot to talk about on this show. We'll start off, guys, with our opening bout between Nate Diaz and Clay Guida. You know, this one, it started off well. The first two rounds were a lot of Diaz using his obvious reach advantage to pick and jab a little bit, but then Guida got in there on the clinch and basically stuck to Diaz like glue throughout the fight. The third round ended up doing about the same as the first two, and Guida picks himself up a unanimous decision victory here, or a split decision victory here. I had this one going Guida's way for the first two rounds, and Diaz did enough with his punches and exchanges in the third round to get in enough points to win that one. But in my opinion, you know, in some ways Diaz lost this fight more than Guida won it, because Diaz was more content to go in and clinch with Guida when Guida was getting the better of the grappling and holding him in the positioning game, and he was winning the fight when he was trading and throwing shots. So he kind of let himself get decisioned out here, and it was a decent opening bout. It won one of the two fight of the nights, which didn't make sense to me. It was not one of my fight of the nights, but still not a terrible opener, but not quite what we were expecting. Matt, what were your thoughts coming out of this first bout?
I actually, I understood it going either way. I thought that second round was pretty clearly Guida. I thought the third round, whenever it was on the feet, Diaz was just picking him apart and using the patented Diaz brothers striking, you know, peppering him with the shots, just the constant accurate shots. I thought the first round, personally, I thought Diaz took that round. When it was on the feet, it was the same as the third round. He was really finding his range. I mean, he's never going to knock somebody out with one punch, but they do he and Nick do a lot of, you know, cumulative damage on their opponents. It just so happened that Guida was in control and on top to end the round, and I think that was the lasting impression in the judge's mind. I honestly think it might serve Nate Diaz better, being 6 feet tall, to add a little muscle to his frame and move up to 170, because all these short little compact guys at 155 are just going to take him down and grind him for three rounds. Most of the time he's going to be good enough to finish him on the ground. But Clay Guida just, you know, he was Clay Guida. He takes him down, he stays active, he stays out of submissions. And, you know, not as nearly as exciting as I thought the fight was going to be, but it wasn't bad. It was a solid opener. Clay Guida has proven that he can contend with the top of the division. He's always been out against the top, and now he's beaten Nate Diaz and Mac Danzig in consecutive fights. So those are two nice wins. Let's throw him against the top of the top and see if he's actually ready for a title shot. But all in all, solid, if not slightly disappointing, opener.
Yeah, I think Guida got to a point where he wasn't content with just being the exciting, flashy fighter that he was early in his career. And I think if he continues the fights the way his last few have gone, it might start to turn some of his fans off, because he's gone from being, total energy before the fight, obviously, and being very scrappy and all that in early fights. But to kind of grinding out these decisions and just using the control game to take that over. Jason, I know this was one of the bouts you were really excited for on this card. How did it open the show for you?
Well, I think the difference is, and it's as far as Guida changing his style, Nate Diaz spent all three rounds looking for a fight, and Clay Guida spent three rounds looking for a win, and that was the deciding factor in this one. I had Guida winning the first two rounds, and the third round was all Diaz. I mean, Guida was just hanging in there, taking a breather, grinding it out, but at that point, he was content to do that because he knew he had the victory. I just think he no longer feels he needs to be that exciting guy because, you know, while it made him a bit of a name, you know, he lost the fight. I think he's a better fighter for this, but I think he's going to be less of a fan favorite for it. I think his energy level was great. I mean, his ring walk was ridiculous. I mean, it was just, I felt just supremely lazy watching him. I was gassed out, but it was the same Clay Guida, but it just, everything felt so different. And this is a guy that's going to win some decisions, but he's not really going to win the fans now. Diaz definitely does need to move up. He's got the frame that will handle the weight easily. I don't believe it's going to be a situation where he loses any of the power or pop he has in his punches. It's conceivable he can gain more. I think it would behoove him to move up to avoid this, just like Sean said, because this could be the blueprint for taking out a guy like Diaz. I was nonplussed overall because I expected so much more from the fight, but this was a smart fight by Guida and just complete opposite for Nate Diaz, who just kept goading and looking for a fight that wasn't there rather than trying to make something happen on his own, which is why he lost it. All in all, good fight to open the show, a lot of energy, and the right man got the decision, but it was nothing like I'd expected it to be.
You guys both make good points on Diaz possibly moving up. The only problem I foresee with that is for the fact that, yeah, he might gain a little more power and his frame can handle it. I think if you face him with four or five of the top 170-pounders, their power is just on a different level. I mean, Koscheck has gotten up there, especially seeing his knockout of Yoshida back in December. I think Diaz would get destroyed, absolutely destroyed, by GSP, Thiago Alves, or John Fitch. So I think, yeah, it might behoove him to move up because he's got a blueprint from the smaller guys, but I think he's kind of in a no-man's land in that as well, because if he's up against some of the top-tier 170-pounders, I don't think he matches up well with them. Would you agree with that assessment or disagree, either of you guys?
I would agree.
I don't fully disagree.
I think, you know, look at what he would do against BJ Penn, Joe Stevenson, Sean Sherk, Frankie Edgar, or Tyson Griffin. You know, those guys are going to take him down to Mullen too. I guess that the fight kind of opened my eyes to the fact that I don't think Nate Diaz is ever going to be a truly elite fighter in any weight class. He's fun to watch, and he's very solid, he's very tough, very scrappy, but I don't think he's just kind of built in a way that's not going to be conducive to being a top-tier fighter in either weight class.
Jason, your thought on that?
He's got this affliction of his own where he's so talented, but where do you go with the talent? I just think he's got to really take some time to revisit, reevaluate, and come up with a better way to take advantage of his raw talent and his gifts. Because what he's doing is frustrating. It's going to be even more frustrating for him because he's not going to be able to get these victories over a Clay Guida. You're right with moving up at 170 with the power there. But I think he could do that if he changes his style of fights. If he moves up and looks for a fight, he's going to get iced. But I think if he takes advantage of working what should work for him, I think he could find himself at an advantage against a heavier opponent. But changing his style, that's going to be hard. I mean, changing either of the Diaz brothers, that's tough times right there.
Good points. That brings us to fight two of the night. Carl Parisen back in action against Dong Hyun Kim. We got a good round out of Kim in the first round. Carl was very tentative, trying to really get around under him. Rogan and Goldberg both commented on it in the second round that it just kind of seemed like he was just trying to hang in there and make sure he got out of round one. I think that's kind of how he was throughout this entire fight. The second round, Kim wasn't able to do a whole much, but Parisen was able to use some nice throws and get himself into a more advantageous position. And then we got round three that was an absolute stalemate. The fight just died in round three here. Caro did barely enough to edge out the split decision. I had it the way the two judges had it. I had Parisen win in the first and the third, or the second and the third round, with Kim having a pretty dominant 10-9 round in the first. But he did nothing the rest of the way, and especially in the third round, if he really would have done almost anything in that third round, he might have made more of a case for winning this. It wasn't a great third round. The first two were an interesting dynamic with the two judokas going against each other and really kind of canceling each other out a bit, but Caro was able to get a couple of really nice judo throws in the second round especially. But outside of that, there really wasn't much going on in this fight, and definitely the worst of the five that were shown on this night. Jason, your thoughts on Parisen's return?
It was a nice return for him, although he didn't look to be in his best shape to me. He really didn't. I know that Rogan had his explanation for the mouthpiece, but while the mouthpiece may have been too big or not properly molded, he was breathing through his mouth from, you know, about midway through the first round on. I thought he was gassed. I thought he was looking for air. Kim started this one just like he did against Matt Brown at UFC 88. Looked great. There wasn't any feeling out process. I thought we were really set for a great fight. And overall, this was the kind of fight where I was into each round, and it was exciting for the moment because of what I could expect from the two. It's not one I'm really going to go back and revisit because it was much ado about nothing. I think Parisian, you know, gets the victory. The third round, he got by just a nose. Neither one did anything. If you're ever going to score round 10-10, it would have been round three, and I could even argue from 9-9 because neither did much more than the other. Nobody really looked for an advantage, and that was the kind of the story of the night. The first round was very good for Kim. Parisian did just enough. He gets a win. He's back, but this is not going to make anybody want to watch him fight. It's not the heat of old. He needs another fight where he shows us some more. I like where his head was at in this one, but I think he's going to need to get in better shape and give a better performance against a higher caliber fighter. Nothing against Kim, but I just think Parisian used to be on another level, and he's going to have to show that he belongs there again rather than what he did on Saturday.
I really think Parisian was just trying to get the fight, get a fight back under his belt after the panic attack incident last fall. I mean, I really think that he mentally just needed to get through two or three rounds of action and just get that back, and I think we'll see a much better Caro Parisien the next time he's out, and I think that's what's going to happen with this, because I think he was really tentative and very much trying to feel his way out through all three rounds in that fight. Matt, what were your thoughts on the second bout from the card?
This was exactly what I expected out of this fight. I predicted a lackluster, uninspired decision win for Caro based on talent alone, and I think that's exactly what we got. He got beaten up and thrown around pretty good in that first round, and was gassed, like Jason said, already in the first round. But I think he sat in the corner and said, all right, I guess it's time to go back to basics and do what I have to do to win this one, whether or not it's exciting. So that's exactly what he did. The only problem is he didn't look great at all. And when you have Martin Kampmann dropping down, Carlos Condit and Brock Larson coming over from WEC, all the, you know, top-level welterweights, you know, where does Caro really fit in there? He's got a long way to go to work his way back up the ladder. I honestly think maybe a fight with Marcus Davis would be pretty interesting to kind of see. They're two guys who, you know, we think they're really solid fighters and we like to watch them, but the winner of that fight is really the only one who can start working their way up the ladder, and the other one just kind of has to be stuck at gatekeeper, I think. So that's what I'd like to see next from Caro. Wasn't a great performance, but he got the job done. That's all you can really ask for.
Absolutely right on that. The show really started to pick up with the next bout. We got Stephen Bonner taking on John Jones. And, guys, plain and simple, John Jones is a star. This was an absolute star-making performance. His eighth fight in less than a year. His second UFC fight. And he went out against a definite established veteran in Stephen Bonner. Even though Bonner was coming off a 15-month layoff, I would say Jones' performance here was, it was more so him being that good than Bonner not being back. I think Bonner had, had some good action, but just didn't have any answer for Jones' grappling and his throws and his slams. I mean, we got a spinning back fist that landed the elbow to the back of Bonner's head in the first round. We got a full German suplex from John Jones. He tried to do a pro wrestling style drop toe hold on him at one point in this fight. Jones is just highly entertaining, highly energetic, and highly skilled for a 21-year-old. I mean, this was just absolutely impressive en route to a absolute unanimous decision victory. I had it with one of the judges. I thought he won all three rounds. Bonner definitely put up a fight through the second and third round. But, I mean, Jones was just too much for him, and the 21-year-old is going to be a force in the light heavyweight division in the UFC. I mean, that kid's going to wear the gold in a few years. I think he's that good right now that he can wear a championship belt within 3 years in the organization for sure. Matt, where were you at on this fight and this performance from John Jones here?
Yeah, you're right. Absolute star-making performance. What's funny is I had my prediction wrong as to how this fight was going to end, but my analysis of it was actually right on. I thought Jones would come out and be the sharper fighter because he's been so active in just a short amount of time, and because, you know, 5 months in between fights, knowing how good he's gotten in such a short amount of time, you know, that extra 5 months in between his last fight, how much better was he going to come out? And he did exactly what I thought he was going to do, and he's going to be a star. Bonner didn't look bad, certainly. I think after he got caught with that spinning back elbow, and it did hit him in the back of the head, just for the record. I mean, it obviously happened too fast to really even see what happened, but that would have been an interesting situation if that had ended up ending the fight. I think Stephen Bonner would have had a pretty good complaint saying, hey, I got an elbow right to the back of my head and basically knocked me out. But he just didn't seem the same the rest of the fight after that shot. He's a super tough guy, basically, you know, one of those near impossible to finish type guys. But he kept coming, but basically it was just more opportunities for John Jones to pull out of his bag of tricks. If anybody watched his first fight in the UFC against Guzmão, it was just, you know, five times around he'd throw a spinning back kick or a back fist or, you know, jumping knees or anything like that. It was just, he learned something in the gym and he says, well, I'm just going to go try that in a fight, see what happens. Because he knows there's not much anybody can do against him if it doesn't work. You can't bring him down. His wrestling is fantastic. It's sky's the limit for him, and as soon as he, like Rashad Evans had to learn, learns the killer instinct and how to finish fights, he's going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, I was actually live at that at UFC 87 when he fought Guzmão, so I saw that one live, and I actually got to meet him quickly after the show. I mean, the guy's a big guy and a lot of energy, but yeah, like you said, it was just kind of, oh, I learned something new, let's try it out. And like he was saying in the interviews, I mean, he was saying, if people think I'm a wild fighter, I'm going to show them I've got the skill, too. I mean, and that's what he did. I mean, his use of Bonner's momentum to throw him multiple times and get those takedowns like that, even if he wasn't keeping him down, he wasn't really trying to. He was trying to do damage from the throws, and he was working it. And, I mean, it was just a highly impressive performance from a 21-year-old. I mean, he's the youngest guy on the UFC roster right now, and it's just it's incredible where his skills are at after only just over a year of training in mixed martial arts. Jason, any more thoughts on John Jones here, and where does Stephen Bonner go from here?
I think Bonner is one of those guys who, at least for now, is kind of like a lifetime ambassador. I think he definitely gets another main card fight, I would assume against an opponent more conducive to his style, to where he could perhaps bring back the old American Psycho. But, you know, after a while, he's going to need to do so much more. It was nice to see that his knee was better. He had a lot of bounce, but this was a bad fight for him because John Jones is definitely, like you said, star in the making. What Jones can do in there are things that you wouldn't teach anyone because nobody could pick it up, and you sure as hell wouldn't want any fighter to ever try because you'd want to kill him. Like Uriah Faber pulled off his move against Mike Brown, which led to his knockout loss. John Jones is a guy who can do that. He's just got it. It becomes instinct by him, and it's something nobody should change. He's going to have to develop that killer instinct. But beyond that, the UFC is going to have to take this slow, and that's going to be hard to do. This is an exciting fighter, strong young kid, world of talent, a lot of athleticism, and it's going to be very tempting to move him up very fast. And I just think while he could more than likely handle it, I think it would be better to slow down a little bit before you move forward with him, because you've got a 10-year, 12-year star here in the making. And you really, from his people as well as the UFC themselves looking after the bottom line, you don't want to put him in there when he's not completely ready for a challenge. I just think that could mess up his head. It could do a lot of damage. I think taking it slow with him, it's going to be a treat to watch. Second and third fight of the night for a while, we're going to want to see him. And he's going to be more ready for a title shot than by the time he gets it. But that's perfect. Because this guy is going to be the type that once he gets up there and gets the belt, I see him as being more of a dominant fighter in the future than Rashad Evans could be. I just see something special about him that he has that once he develops the killer instinct, I mean, looking further, a Jones-Evans fight, that's a hell of a fight. That's definitely a marquee kind of matchup for him, and it could happen in a few years. You know, best of luck to Bonner. He looked in shape. He looked ready, but I think going back to, like, Anderson Silva against Chris Lieben, a lot of people didn't know who Silva was. Well, now you know, and that's why he cut through Lieben with such ease. Same thing is going to happen here in a year or so with John Jones. Bonner's going to be that good, likable guy, tough guy, but it's going to make sense. He did what he did, and he was able to do what he did on Saturday night because this is that special of a fighter. This is a future superstar, 10, 12-year career, and it's just a matter of taking it in the right direction, guiding him along, and a good camp behind him. The sky's the limit.
Absolutely agreed. Brings us to our semi-main event of the evening, Lyoto Machida taking on Thiago Silva, and I don't think anyone would disagree with me here that this was probably Lyoto Machida's best fight in the UFC for sure, if not his entire career. I mean, this was just a masterful display of why he is a top light heavyweight. And if anyone else wants to call him boring, go ask Thiago Silva what happens. I mean, this was one of the most dramatic finishes in the history of the UFC. I mean, it was with 1/4 of a second left in the round, right before the buzzer. He tosses him off, comes down with a gigantic right hand that knocks Thiago Silva out cold. I mean, no one at all expected that out of Lyoto Machida, at least that type of a finish. They expected the performance that he put on in the first round, which was a lot more exciting than his style normally is, and I think Silva's aggressiveness really helped it be that, like we thought it would, because Machida was able to, or was forced to actually do some more and add some more shots, but instead of Silva getting anything really going on offense, it was Machida dropping him multiple times with kicks, knees, punches. It didn't matter. This was Machida's fight all the way, and he finished it off in one of the most spectacular ways that he possibly could have. Amazing finish, and it's a damn shame that Lyoto Machida is not automatically given that next title shot against Rashad Evans. The fact that he has to wait through the meaningless Quentin Jackson, Keith Jardine fight is 100% asinine, absolutely unnecessary. Lyoto Machida deserves a title shot, plain and simple. There is no excuse at all for not giving him a title shot. Jason, your thoughts on the Dragon's performance here?
Smooth. One word, smooth. I think Silva, just like anybody else, talked a lot of talk of what he wanted to do and stuff he's capable of doing, but once he's in there with him, he was confused. Silva was thoroughly and utterly confused by about midway through that first round, and this was Machida's fight. Ended it just it brutally. He disconnected all of the wiring as the horn sounds, the big KO, and, you know, Machida says, "People, am I deserve the title shot?" Yeah. Yeah, you do. And it's a shame that you've been branded such a killjoy, non-exciting fighter, which is true. That's why he hasn't gotten the shot or even been spoken of. And, you know, a lot of people were pulling for Silva because of that. But Machida showed a lot in this fight, and it is a complete travesty that he is forced to wait on the sidelines until Rampage gets back up there. Because Machida deserves this shot. If anybody deserves a title shot at all, entirely, it is Lyoto Machida. He's done nothing but win, and win convincingly, and especially with a fight like this, which was just an exclamation point after his name. Not only is he smooth and untouchable, the guy can knock you out. He can drop you, and Thiago Silva is a beast of a fighter, but I think as much as John Jones is going to be a future star, I think this is a star-making turn for Machida as far as, yeah, he's here now. He shouldn't be forced to wait any longer. And for all of you who weren't fans of his style before, take a look at how he performed here against Silva. The guy is capable of doing this, and, you know, he prefers to fight the hit and not be hit style, which is the smart thing to do. But this was just this was the perfect moment of the night for anybody because he showed that he is capable of being a killer. And I think that's one thing, you know, when people start talking about him being boring, I think they automatically assume he's not a killer. He doesn't have that instinct. He does have it, and he showed it in this bout, and he deserves a title shot sooner rather than later. It's a shame he has to wait, but damn it, he needs the title shot. He deserves to be at the top of the card, and until somebody can prove otherwise, he's damn near tops in that division because what we saw Saturday night was something special.
Matt, your thoughts here on Lyoto Machida's performance?
I think if George St. Pierre had the performance of the night, then the Machida was 1A. Wasn't Thiago Silva supposed to be, like, his toughest test to date? Because he left that fight without a scratch on him. He hasn't even really been in a fight yet in the UFC. Against Tito Ortiz, he basically dominated Tito for 3 rounds before crushing him with a knee to the body and then almost got caught in a triangle. So that's basically the only trouble he's been in his, what, 5 fights in the UFC now? 5 or 6?
Mm-hmm.
This is amazing. He went through a whole round and just picked Thiago Silva apart. Thiago Silva was obviously not the man to solve the riddle known as Machida, but, I mean, this was just fantastic. He, and like Jason said, to anybody who thinks he lacks the killer instinct, that's just wrong. He's proven several times before that as soon as he feels like he has an opponent hurt, he pounces on him, and he's ready to get that fight done. He doesn't want to get hit, so why would he want to spend any more time in a cage with another guy looking to knock his head off than he absolutely has to? When he sees an opening, he goes for the finish, and he has more power than anybody realized, and he's very accurate, and it's a dangerous combination right now. Thiago Silva is still a top 10 light heavyweight in my mind. I don't think he really got diminished by this fight at all. He was just up against an unstoppable force on Saturday night. This will move Machida up to number 2 in my light heavyweight rankings, only behind Rashad. And it's time for a title shot. He has nothing left to prove. He's beaten, you know, Thiago Silva, Tito Ortiz, and Sokoju in his last 3 fights. So, I mean, that's a pretty solid resume for a guy who's undefeated and also has wins over Rich Franklin, Stephen Bonner, and BJ Penn. you can't really ask anybody to do much more. It's time to give him a title shot. So I guess we'll all just have to become Keith Jardine fans in March. not something I'm looking forward to, but, you know, if it means Machida gets his rightful title shot, then I guess that's what I've got to do.
Yep, grow the beard now. Join the
And that gets us to the fight that everyone was waiting for, the fight that has been hyped more than pretty much any fight I think I can remember. And there's no way that anyone could have walked out of this fight disappointed except for the hardest of hardcore BJ Penn fans, because plain and simple, Georges St-Pierre is that good. He has improved that much to the point where in their first fight, when he was beaten to a bloody pulp in the first round, and then he used positioning and takedowns to eke out a split decision in their first fight, these are still the same two men. They're the same two men, but Georges St-Pierre is on such another level. After losing to Matt Serra and returning and rededicating himself to training and improving on each fight, Georges St-Pierre is a ridiculous fighter. Plain and simple, he is that much better than pretty much everyone out there. I don't think it's hyperbole to say that if he and Anderson Silva face off in 2009, they're about dead even in the odds on that fight. I don't think either man would have a major advantage in that one. I think both should be considered very on pretty much even ground if they face off, because especially if St-Pierre gets through Thiago Alves in their fight, because that's going to be one of his toughest tests at 170, because Alves is a big, big man at 170. But George here, I mean, the way he passed through BJ's guard multiple times and held side control and just punished BJ. He just crushed BJ Penn's will in this fight. Absolutely destroyed him through four rounds. The first round was the only round that was even competitive, and that's because Penn's great takedown defense was at work and GSP was trying to frustrate him and continually outworking him and holding him on the cage and just trying to wear him down, and it worked. He got him down in the second round, and from there, I mean, it was just about done in the second round. BJ was definitely frustrated, and you could see his will breaking as each successive punch landed, as each successive act landed, and as the time ticked off and as the clock kept winding down, and he got into 20 minutes of this beating. I mean, yeah, he wants to say George tapped out to Matt Serra. Well, he didn't answer the bell for the fifth round, so there you go. Georges St-Pierre pushed it right back into his face and showed that he's one of, if not the single best fighters in the world today. And you can say anything you want about Fedor Emelianenko. He's fighting heavyweight fighters who do not have the skill sets of the Matt Hughes, of the BJ Penns, of some of the guys that Georges St-Pierre has gone through. I mean, he's fighting guys that, yeah, well, they're not the big top name heavyweights and all of that. They're some of the most skilled guys in mixed martial arts, and Georges St-Pierre is dominating all of them. And I mean, I don't know what else you can say about about the welterweight champion other than wow, plain and simple. Matt, your thoughts on how the main event came off?
Well, for the record, I was one of those diehard BJ fans who was very disappointed. I thought I was going to see a war, and instead I got a coronation at the expense of one of my favorite fighters. But taking nothing away from Georges St-Pierre, that was a phenomenal performance. The brutal precision with everything that he did, I mean, he mapped out his game plan for us in his post-fight interview, saying, you know, BJ's got these small shoulders that are really good for his hand speed with his boxing, so I was just going to lean on him and turn it into a wrestling match until he wore out. That's exactly what happened, and BJ didn't have a chance. There was nothing BJ Penn could have done in this fight to beat Georges St-Pierre on this night. And this fight, honestly, moves George St. Pierre up to number one in my pound-for-pound rankings. I'm always the one that's harping on, well, George St. Pierre, his chin is questionable, so if you get him in there with a striker that can catch him early, then that could be his downfall. I'm not so sure he's hittable at this point. He's
good
still
point.
Athletic. He's elusive just like Machida, but he also is the best wrestler in all of MMA. You cannot stop this man's takedowns. Travis Luter took down Anderson Silva, so if anybody thinks George St. Pierre can't take Anderson Silva down and pound him out for five rounds, I think they're kidding themselves at this point. The only thing that can stop George St. Pierre right now is a lack of focus like he had coming into the Matt Serra fight. As long as George St. Pierre is properly motivated, and I think he will be for every fight from here on out, I think he's unstoppable. We can try and get ourselves pumped up for the Thiago Alves fight, but it's going to look exactly like we saw Saturday night. He's going to take him down, and he's going to maul him until Thiago Alves quits, just like BJ Penn quit in this fight. I don't really know what's left that will truly be exciting. We can get hyped up for the fights beforehand, but I think any fight that takes place with George St. Pierre is going to be almost a boring, one-sided beating from here on out. Look what he did to John Fitch. John Fitch is fantastic. He is the clear number two welterweight in the world, if you ask me, and he is on a completely different level down from George St. Pierre. As far as BJ goes, that's got to be discouraging. It's going to be a little tough to sell the Kenny Florian fight for him now. I think he'll probably take a pretty long layoff and really reevaluate things. BJ has a lot of pride in knowing that he's just absolutely not as good as someone is not going to sit well with him. Hopefully, it doesn't take long, and we can see him back in there for the big show at UFC 100 against Kenny Florian. I think that's the perfect scenario, but I'm not keeping my fingers crossed that I think he's going to be out for a little while and may end up even, vacating the lightweight belt for a short time to get his head straight so that division is not caught up any more than it already is. But, taking nothing away from George St. Pierre, I was disappointed because my guy didn't win, but that was just an amazing performance by the best fighter on the planet.
Absolutely. And the thing with BJ here is, he really needs to get his head straight because if he doesn't go back to training the way he needs to be a dominant lightweight champion, he'll get beat by Kenny Florian. If he takes that fight too early or when he's not fully mentally prepared, Kenny Florian's on a completely different level than when he got beat by Sean Sherk. I think if Kenny Florian faces Sherk right now, I think Kenny Florian wins that fight. So it's going to be a dangerous fight for BJ Penn when they face off, especially coming off of this highly dejecting, disappointing loss to GSP. Because like you said, with his pride, it's not going to sit well with him that he's just not as good as someone. And he clearly is not as good as George St. Pierre. And it has nothing to do with size. They matched up 3 years ago at the same weight, the same size. I mean, George is maybe a little bit bigger. He's definitely improved greatly in pretty much every other aspect of his game. But at the same time, it wasn't size that won it. It was just George being that much better on Saturday night. And I just got to say quickly, well, I was terrible with my picks overall on this card. I absolutely nailed this fight. Fourth round TKO. I called it. Just got to say it. Jason, your thoughts on the main event?
Yeah, I had the fourth round TKO going the other way. Penn was never in this fight. We know there's going to be a letdown for Penn. And honestly, even though it shouldn't be held up, Penn versus Florian's not a good fight right now. I just don't know where BJ's head's going to be. That's prime for Florian to topple him. But I also look at GSP. He was never been in better shape as he was on this night. I don't believe he's ever been as focused. I think this was the sharpest he could possibly be as far as being trained. And I just wonder about a letdown. If there ever could be a spot for somebody to slip in and, catch him while he's not looking, it would be a guy like Thiago Alves. I don't see the fight having, to go any other way than St. Pierre versus Penn did, But you got to wonder, when you have such a build-up to a mega fight and you're mentally on and your body is on and you do everything that so many people said you couldn't do, there's going to have to be a letdown period and a cool-down period, and he's going to be going into a fight with a guy who should be as mentally focused on GSP as GSP was for BJ Penn. And I think that's when you have the prime possibility of an upset. It should not happen, but I think there is a possibility for that. Penn versus Florian, there definitely is. You know, he's prime for the taking right now. The fight probably should have been stopped. I understand why it wasn't, out of deference to BJ Penn and the scale of the fight and such, but any other fight would have been stopped. That round four was 10-8, even 10-7. It was ridiculous. It was the smart move for his corner to stop it. He just wasn't in the fight. This mega fight comes off looking like a mismatch, and that is nothing against BJ Penn, just pure testament to George St. Pierre. You know, all the talk about Fedor and Anderson Silva, and not too many have really, really thrown GSP up there in the mix, but you can better believe after a performance like this that he should be. Now, one thing also coming from the card is you look at the payroll. The payroll for this entire card was just a little bit over $1 million. That's it, just a little bit over $1 million. GSP and Penn combined to make $25,000 more than Josh Barnett got at Affliction Day of Reckoning. You want to know how to run a successful business? Here's a template for it right here. When you actually pay out less than you took in at the gate, that's a good night. You know, the whole payroll for this night was less than what Arlovsky got for getting dusted off by Fedor. GSP comes out of this event. The Countdown show introduced him to a wider audience, and I think you've got a superstar who he's got the looks for the ladies. No denying that one. He's a marketable face. He's a respectful guy. The show of sportsmanship at the end of the match was just superb. I think this is the guy you hitch your cart to and you move forward with as being a world beater once Anderson Silva hangs him up, as he's predicted to do. GSP can get past Alves, which he should. You're looking at a mega, mega fight, GSP versus Anderson Silva. That is going to be huge, and I do believe it will happen. GSP can comfortably gain that weight and go to work, and that's a fight that we should just be hoping to be lucky enough to get a chance to see. You know, it was a hell of a night when a mega fight turns into a mismatch, and GSP comes out of this one looking every bit the star he is, and Penn's going to take some time off. He doesn't really lose much luster as far as in the lightweight division, but a guy like Penn, where's his head at? He's going to need to take some time, and running into a match with Florian, you know, Kenny deserves it. The title's been held up long enough, but this is prime for Florian to take it away. And I look for Penn to, you know, if that would happen, I'd look for a year layoff or more from him, because this is just going to rattle him for some time.
Absolutely. Well, guys, thanks again for joining me on the Torch Audio Update. We've got a bit of a cool down period coming, even though we've got another live show on Saturday. Then in a couple of weeks, we've got another free show with UFC 95, but a bit of a cool down period as far as big fights go. But we'll be talking to you guys here shortly to talk about Saturday's card as well as the card on the 21st. And then we've got Jackson Jardine at the beginning of March. So thank you guys again for joining me on the Torch Audio Update. We'll talk to you soon.